So, Cincinnati Podcast, I am your Bengals columnist, Paul Leader Jr. here with Politics Extra, Politics Insider, knower of all things Cincinnati, Jason Williams. What's up?
What's up? Can you start referring to me as just PX? Thank you.
It's weird. I don't like calling you by initials. Like, PX is like it's your initials, you know, like your AJ or something like that. You're not PX.
It was funny the other day. I was talking to my mom.
Did you make your mom call you PX?
No, but she's just like, she's like, what? You're calling, like, my mom's not, like, they don't live here in another part of Ohio, but she's like, you got a name for your column, and it's Politics. I was like, Politics Extra. She's like, yeah, and what do you call it? Yeah, PX. She's like, why do you, if you're going to call it, like, wouldn't it be PE? I'm like, well, that's
technically.
My mom, the retired high school English teacher.
She's got a point. But no, we like to eliminate letters and things like that in our industry. It's a very popular thing. We like to spell things the way we want to spell them.
You know what I say about it?
What?
As long as Burl keeps letting me use PX, I'm going to keep going with it.
Keep using it. And guess what I'm going to keep doing every Sunday? Using BX.
BX.
BX and
Bengals
PX.
Extra.
Bengals Extra. That's it. Branding.
Which you started, you spun that out of Politics Extra.
I did.
I remember you asking me about it.
I felt like I needed to ask you for permission because you had created
your
brand.
Well, that was very nice. You didn't have to, but you did, and that was very nice.
I didn't want to just start doing it.
So started
And then you'd look across the newsroom, and you'd like squint your eyes at me angrily and be like, this guy trying to take my vibe.
So started our friendship. Hey, by the way, you know, we talked about it last week. This is a serious thing, sadly. Coworker passing away. You know, we had a get together last week with all a bunch of current and former Inquirer sports and news folks and Cincinnati Post people, and I had someone come up to me and say at that thing, which was very great to see people. Someone told me that they think that you and I are like the new version of the angry guys. For you Cincinnatians, I know you know the angry guys, the sports guys, Tom Gamble, Richard Skinner,
Gambo and Skinny.
I'm like, yeah, I don't think so. Like,
are we too angry? I don't feel like
I'm not
very
that angry. You're not. You're certainly not angry. I'm a curmudgeon, but
you are a curmudgeon. I try not to be too angry. I try to keep it optimistic and positive. Oh, I get mad about things that happen in my neighborhood, like Carmageddon.
Yes. Yeah, you do,
dude. Carmageddon 2018 really had me miffed. But we've since recovered.
To a double dead end street.
But outside of that, let's make a conscious effort. Maybe that'll be our New Year's resolution early. To not be angry, guys.
Nothing to be angry about.
Nothing to be angry about, unless we're going to talk about City Hall.
Yeah, there is kind of stuff to be angry
about. Unless we got to talk about City Hall. Cool. Let's get into sort of some news of the week here.
Yeah.
So, what is the latest? So now Dieters has the phones, right? Is this where we're at in the scandal? Like the phones are all officially. What will come of this? The latest in the text messaging scandal and the phone that was just. Deleted messages were deleted or dropped in toilets or whatever. Like, what
really not sure what's going to come of it, you know. So, to kind of recap, you know, prosecutor's office asked for the five progressive Democrats' phones in the middle of this ongoing, 8 month long now, open meetings lawsuit, in which, there's a you know, the lawsuit accuses the five progressive Democrats on council of a quorum and meeting over text messages, and we have had a lot of those released and seen those, and they certainly did discuss city business, and that's against state law. But now it's continued on, and so now the prosecutor does have all the phones. It's Sharon Coolidge says it looks like it's going to take a while for him, literally, and as Sherry told me this, that the prosecutor's office is going through every text message from each of these five people, whether it was sent to amongst them or like if you sent your mom a text message.
Oh my.
So they have to sift through all these things to figure out and determine whether what was city business and what wasn't and what was maybe a violation of open meetings and what wasn't. And so I think this is going to take a while. Maybe not till the end of the month, or at least another 2 or 3 weeks.
What is the worst case scenario for these five? Like, well, I mean, what could really realistically happen to them outside? I mean, are we talking like, okay, they could get a slap on the wrist, or is someone going to lose a job, or what could even happen?
Well, certainly, I think. There's certainly some potential of Wendell Young, who has been the city attorneys have said that he told them he deleted text messages upon, you know, them asking them for him. So the court ordered these to be turned over, and he deleted them. And so there's certainly
said,
a potential. There's potential some potential fallout from that for him.
Sure.
On the legal side of things. Now on the political side, there's potential fallout. But in terms of what could really happen to them collectively, well, there's no recall provision in the city's law that says you have to resign or retire, leave the job because of you've been convicted of a crime or you've been in violation of open meetings laws or open records laws. So there's nothing there that is really legally going to force anyone to resign from council. It's so complex. I'm trying to collect my thoughts around it because there's a lot of layers here. But at the end of the day, you know, they could get fined for violating open meetings laws, and ultimately that's not coming out of their pocket. That's coming out of the city's coffers. So ultimately it's coming out of the taxpayers' coffers, that the taxpayers are going to have to potentially pay a fine for these guys violating really the job that, you know, the public's trust. It's kind of a weird thing to think that the public put you there, you flouted your duty to, you know, uphold their trust, and yet by doing so, you charge the public for your, you know, it's the public that has to pay for it.
Yeah, it just seems. I don't know. I think for me, and I'm gonna play the role I always play in this, is just like regular everyday guy. Just roll my eyes at all this crap.
Totally.
Like, I don't get it. I don't care. I don't care, you know, like whatever. I care about the principles of the thing, and I want people that are just like, oh, if you're openly deleting, if you're just like, we want that, no, delete. Those people, there needs to be consequences for doing that. But the rest of it, it's like all this stuff with City Hall. I think everyone across the city is just fed up with the garbage.
Yeah.
Just the wine, get something done. Like, this is the type of stuff I feel like it wastes our time so much when there's so many things that we should be spending debating, like real good quality debates about important things about the city. Instead, you know, we spend so much time dealing with this stuff, and they spend so much time dealing with this stuff,
you know, and then there's a lot of folks on both sides who then who get outraged about on social media about it seems like the wrong thing, like they'll, and this is as old as the dawn of time and in this country, about killing the messenger. But it's like people get on me for writing about it, and I'm like, well, I'm writing about it because this is an issue. Breaking open meetings laws and potentially covering up evidence in a court case. And let me be clear about that. I don't care what the court case is about. The court case, certainly there's a lot of political motivation going on there. That's no real secret. It all really goes to the crux of the 2021 mayor's race. But that's really beside the point. If a judge says, I need you to turn these things over in a lawsuit, and you deliberately delete that information, no matter what you think of the court case, that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really my issue, and that is something that needs to be brought to light. And it's our job as watchdogs to bring it to light and to call people out and hold them accountable for it.
And now we'll see what happens, because Joe Dieters is doing the exact same thing.
Exactly.
When he's involved, and now they're going to go through all the text messages and see what comes of it. All right, we got a fun guest today, because we were yelled at essentially, for not having John Fay, our esteemed Reds beat writer, Reds columnist here.
And resident West Sider.
And resident West Sider.
Native, lifelong.
Outspoken West Sider, I believe, for the fact that we have not had him on. If you're going to have a show about Cincinnati, I mean, he's pretty much right there. He's pretty much it.
He is so Cincinnati.
He is so Cincinnati. And so we...
And
we,
Cincinnati is so him.
You're exactly right. It's molded around him. So we have decided we are giving in, maybe for fear, maybe more out of fear than anything, and we decide we're going to have Jonathan. It's perfect place to start because we can talk East Side, West Side, and that is the oldest debate in the history of our fine city. So anyway, he's mad at me for always talking about the East Side. So we're gonna let's bring in John. All right, it's interview time here on That's So Cincinnati, and it was brought to my attention recently that we talk way too much about the East Side, and it's crap, Jason. It's ridiculous how much you and I sit here and talk about areas, certain areas of town, or more importantly, don't talk about certain areas of town enough. And you know what that does in Cincinnati? It pisses people off.
Doesn't go over real well.
Doesn't
I
go over well.
I think that's you, by the way, that talks about.
I do. I talk about things that I know.
Because you live in Oakley and all the cool little things coming in Oakley.
And that doesn't, that, you know.
Blah, blah, blah.
I know. That doesn't sit well with a certain contingent of people in this fair city that live on the West Side. You know who brought that to my attention? My friend and yours. John Fay. Fay Man has decided that he needs to come in here as our West Side representative.
He's here to balance things out.
Balance it out.
I did light you up on that, didn't I?
You did. Yeah.
Well, your mother-in-law lives on the West Side, right?
Correct.
And you can't find her house.
No, I can find her house. I don't like how all the streets over there seem to not have lines. Yeah. Like, what? Can we just have lanes? So there can be, everything is just, it's just complete, it's chaos.
See, again, that's an elitist East Side look at the West Side. But yeah, okay. Come over sometime. You know, I'll give you a tour.
I understand that. This is as old as Cincinnati itself. I mean, this East Side West Side thing is as old as this city goes. There's nothing more Cincinnati than this debate.
No, there's not.
And I
East Side West Side, and there's no one better to talk about the West Side than John Fay.
Yeah,
I am a longtime Reds beat writer.
Yeah, and I'm a cliche. I went to Elder. My wife went to Seton. Yeah. I don't ask people what high school they went to, which is the Cincinnati cliche. I say,
thank you, John.
I say, what parish did you go to? And once they tell me the parish, I say, well, what street did you live on? Do you live on, or did you live on? So yeah, I'm pretty much a walking, talking Cincinnati cliche.
Why do you love the West Side so much? Let's start there.
You know, it's weird. It's kind of like living in a small town, even though you live in Cincinnati. I live about a mile from where I grew up, you know, and I live in a house that I thought, oh boy, that's where rich people lived. You know, I lived in I grew up in a Cape Cod with seven brothers and sisters, you know, and that was typical. And I said, you know, we were a family of seven on our street. That was, you know, medium-sized family. I mean, it was, everybody had huge families. And you know, the people go to Elder games, or, you know, at the time when I was growing up, West High Elder was a big deal. And now, you know. So,
on Thanksgiving Day, right?
Yeah. That was the deal. You went on Thanksgiving, and, you know, just there's a feeling of, I don't know, like I said, like almost a small-town thing. But my wife would move the East Side in a minute, but I'm said, you know, without me.
So, I mean, you grew up there, you lived there, you've worked here in Cincinnati your entire career. Is it still that way as much as it was from when you can first remember, back when you were, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years old? Does it still remind you very much of a small town?
Yeah.
Or has it changed at all in that way?
It really hasn't. It hasn't changed that much. There's a, you know, the West Side, I eat dinner every night with the Reds with these guys. We call it the 620 group, and almost all of them live on the East Side, you know, so I just rip them and, you know, and all that, this kind of stuff. But it really is. It hasn't changed that much. I mean, it has it spread out like the East Side has, where, you know, now Loveland is, you know, Loveland used to be out there as like in the country where, you know, now everything's spread. So it spread a little bit to the west, but yeah, it still has that feel.
Do you,
why don't people on the west side like nice things? Oh my God. I'm just trying to. That's too far. I'm just trying to poke at you. What is the misconception about Westsiders that you despise most?
I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of different than most Westsiders. I'm a liberal Democrat, so I kind of stand out there. So, you know, but you know, my buddies, you know, we get together and we'll argue politics every once in a while. And you know, I live around the corner from Steve Shabbat, and you know, you kind of know everyone in the neighborhood. Denise Driehaus, the commissioner.
Yeah.
I two of my best friends are Driehaus's, her cousins. So you know, everyone's kind of, you know, you know the people from over there.
Is the house you grew up in still in your family? You said you live, what do you say, you live around the block or?
No. I live about a mile from there. I live on the street name changed. I live on Ferguson.
Yeah.
But they changed it to Geyer Woods Lane for some odd reason. Our little, you know, there's 14 houses on a dead end side. And my house butts up against the Gamble Estate, so my backyard. Oh. Yeah.
Nice. In Westwood.
Westwood. Yeah. I live in Westwood.
Is there ever going to be an easy way to get out there, though? Like, are we ever going to build? It is just such a pain to get into the core of the West Side. I mean,
this guy's all about the roads.
I am all about the roads because this is how I explore it.
I will say this. I now live in the central part of the region, so I'm neutral in this whole thing.
You are.
And I'm not from here, but I will say, like, the West Side does remind me a lot of where I grew up in small town, working class. Everybody knows everyone. I think I would really totally live on the West Side. Like, there's a lot of nice houses on the West Side. Delhi is a lovely place. It just, to me, it seems so hard to get around. Is that a misconception or?
Well, you know, I just know how to do it. You know, it's before GPS. You know, but I will say this: every once in a while, I have to drive my brother-in-law to the hospital up in Clifton, and he lives in Delhi, and I did crank up the GPS to see the easiest way to get there because I would go one way, and I'm thinking, man, is that the right way? So I understand that. You know, that thing where people think, oh, it's so hard to get there. But, you know, for me, I've lived there my whole life.
Yeah.
I do like Price Hill Chili.
It's
an institution.
I'm not saying this because you're in the room. I would say it if you weren't in the room. But I think Price Hill Chili buries everyone, all the chili parlors in town, the franchise ones.
Even
the little
Skyline.
Mom and pop, even Skyline. I love Skyline, but I think Price Hill Chili is the best.
Yeah, I like it. As far as chili, I'm still Skyline.
Okay.
You know, that came to me later, but yeah.
Why is it because of the atmosphere, Jason?
No, I like the atmosphere, but like I walk out of there not feeling like just completely overstuffed. Every time I eat Skyline, I feel that way, but when it seems a little thinner or leaner.
Yeah.
I don't know. This is a question that, you know, I get asked every once in a while about, and I think you would have this perspective as being a native Cincinnatian and having covered the Reds for so long. What do you make? Well, first of all, what do you make of FC Cincinnati and the popularity that's gotten around that? I mean, did you ever think you would see this soccer be embraced like this in this region?
No, I didn't. I think they did a great job with it. And I think, you know, I'm old. I'm going to be 62 soon, so you know I'm not a soccer guy. You know, when I went to Elder High School, they didn't have a soccer team till I was a junior. So I mean, you know, but the thing I kind of knew was some people that I hang out with that are younger than me, that they were into soccer, not so much FC Cincinnati, but they were looking at European soccer and that kind of thing. And I thought, you know, and I think they tapped into that. I think they've done a remarkable job. We'll see how it goes now that they're a major league soccer team and the prices will go up and that kind of thing. I covered a few games back when I was on with a different company for a little while. Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting thing. It's a bunch of young people who like to go there and drink – very expensive beer and, you know, hang out. But they've tapped into it. It's a cool thing.
Do you buy this notion that, I don't know if it's a notion or not, but do you think it will hurt the Reds' bottom line long term, especially if the Reds continue to struggle and FC continues to be popular? And I know I understand this is a long game here, but what are your thoughts on that when people talk about
that? The thing I say about any Cincinnati sport, if you win, people will show up.
Yeah.
And if you don't win, they won't. It's as simple as that.
Yep.
You know, I covered UC football 25 years ago, and you'd have 8,000 people at the game. But when they started winning, it came around. Same UC basketball, anything. The Bengals, the Reds, anything. If you win, people really embrace it, because this is basically a – for a major league city, this is a small town. So if you can get that, and I think if the Reds can get that back, because I think they do a great job with everything other than the team on the field.
Correct.
You know,
they do. Yeah,
they do a nice job with that. So I think they can overcome. People aren't deciding between FC Cincinnati and the Reds. They're just deciding not to go to Reds games because the Reds aren't very good right now.
Well, the FC thing, and that's to me what's been so impressive about people going there, is that people have gone there and it hasn't had anything to do with winning or losing, even though they have won, you know, a lot. I mean, it's been about the experience they've created. People have bought into going to it, and they've not, you know. Now, at some point when you join MLS, it will become more about you got to prove that you can go win, because people aren't going to want to go watch you lose after a while. When you're no longer the new hot thing, and then they'll become like everybody else in this city. But for now, it's the interesting thing about the way they've built up is they've done it organically through creating an experience and an environment, not necessarily being as much about whatever the team goes and does on the field.
Well, I think the thing they've captured is soccer, period.
Yeah.
I mean, if you go down on Fountain Square and ask people to name three FC Cincinnati, no one could do it.
Yeah.
You know, everybody knows A.J. Green. Everybody knows Joey Votto. So it's a different kind of thing. I think they just jumped on the soccer thing. People wanted soccer, and they got it. So, I think this – it's a tough next step for them, I think.
It also seems like a very soccer more so than any other, baseball or football certainly, is a more of a niche sport. It also seems like a very region-specific, even maybe city-specific thing, whereas the Reds have this – and they always have had this regional draw. I mean, that's why they have the caravan that goes all the way out to Huntington, West Virginia, and Indianapolis, and down to Lexington. And
when you look at some of the most successful, the most rabid fan bases in MLS, it's these places that have these really strong young urban cores, which is why they want to put everything down in there. Your Portlands, your Seattles, heck, even what's happened in Atlanta, they've really had turned out to have a huge base down there. And I think that's what happened here. I mean, this was FC tapping into everything that's happened at Over the Rhine, everything that's happened with the urban core here inside of the city. That group, that young professionals that they've built up, is the audience that's there, and I think that's part of it, and that's part of what baseball lacks, right? I mean, that's the other side of baseball. Is baseball is dying to have that audience and is trying everything they can to find a way to get it, and kind of, I don't know whether they're hitting the mark yet or not, but they're trying.
Well, you know, I think, you know, when I grew up, it was not Great American, but Riverfront Stadium. This place is so much nicer to go there, and I think if the Reds are decent, people love to go there. It's a beautiful place to spend a summer night. If you sit up high, you get that view of the river and everything. So I think if they can just turn around and be decent, I think they'll start drawing again.
Have a little fun. How many years have you been covering the Reds beat total?
Yeah, probably since 97, I'd say.
Okay. Have you been to every ballpark now? I mean, I know there's been some new ones that have popped up.
I think so.
Let's have a little fun. What's your favorite out of town ballpark?
The thing that it throws people, but Pittsburgh is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. I mean, Pittsburgh, particularly where we sit in the press box, the sun sets on the city, the Roberto Clemente Bridge comes in. It's just a beautiful place. I mean, and it, San Francisco is really nice. And a lot of what affects what I think about a ballpark is where my seat is. You know, in San Francisco, we're really low. We can't see the bay at all. But Pittsburgh, it's like, wow. I mean, it's a beautiful place.
I went to a game in Pittsburgh. Sorry. But
oh, no, you're fine.
And sat behind. I'd gotten pretty good seats and sat basically right behind home plate, similarly where you guys are. It was the night of the supermoon. And the literal supermoon, it looked like Batman or something. The supermoon was through the buildings across the way and over the outfield. And it was just, it was one of the craziest, it was one of the most coolest things I've ever seen as far as a view at a ballpark. And Pittsburgh does that on a regular basis. People don't understand.
Yeah,
if you're ever looking for a good road trip, if you want to do a Reds road trip, it's not far. It's an easy drive. I love their downtown, actually. And their ballpark is fantastic.
I'll go anywhere.
Can I ask?
Go ahead.
Time-wise, how?
You do your thing.
You got any good Marty stories? Well, let me ask you this: how much longer do you think Marty's going to do this?
Wow. He always said that he would step down at some point, but I think he likes being Marty Brenneman, which is like the best thing to be.
That's good.
And I think he still has it. I'll tell people that we've done the second inning. I've done that almost the whole time I've been doing it. And when the ball's in the air, he is so good. And I don't think you can appreciate that till you see it happen. When the ball's hit and there's two guys on base, and he can describe it perfectly. And he's – I don't know how old he is. I think he's in his mid-70s, but he's in really good shape. I can't see him stepping. I can see him cutting back. He's cut back greatly. He used to call me the bank president because I took off weekends, and I'm like, you travel the way I travel, son, and but the way they've cut it back a little bit where he does fewer road trips and fewer home games, I don't see him quitting.
Has Marty you grew up listening to Marty too, right? Or, has he always been this blunt? Has his style always been that way, or did he change at some point?
I think he's always been
pretty
much. I think he was more of
call it like you see it.
Yeah, he was. I think he rooted more for the team when he was younger.
Yeah.
His voice was a lot higher. But, yeah, he's different than anyone else. That's the thing. He's unique from any announcer that, I think to give the Castellini family credit, they appreciate that. They don't. A lot of guys, when he says what he says, their job would be in jeopardy. But he, that's not what they think.
I respect that too about the Castellinis, that they've allowed him. They recognize
right.
that the audience loves him, and I'm sure they'll get their letters every once in a while, like, oh, the Marty's, that was way over the top what Marty said, but they've stayed out of his way and allowed him to be him. And there's nobody better.
The thing yesterday, I was watching the ceremonies for President Bush.
Mm-hmm.
And Bob Castellini's more of a contemporary of the second 43.
Yeah.
They're friends.
Yeah.
And I always thought of that about Bob, where he disagrees with me on a lot of stuff, but he never loses respect. He doesn't mind when someone criticizes him. He gets mad at you occasionally.
Yeah.
Particularly, Doc and things like that. But he understands the role of the people that cover him. And it's a tremendous thing. I think he's done that the whole time he took over. He wasn't a very public guy before he took over. But now that he's taken over, he'll pull me aside and say, I don't like this or whatever. But it's never a grudge, It's never like he's going to stop talking to me or whatever. So I admire him in that way.
I'll tell you, to piggyback off that, I admire that as well. The people, there are so few people who get it in business, in politics, that we cover and write about on a regular basis who get it that way, who understand that and respect that we have a job to do and respect that they're in a position of power and decision-making and that they're not perfect and they're going to be criticized at times. And for someone like him to get it is a very rare thing, and I respect that tremendously.
It's funny. That is one thing I will say about Mike Brown. he's got to be the one of the only owners in the entire NFL that embraces the media like he does. He is one of the few. I mean, there are local media is still invited to travel with the team. You know how much that happens in the NFL? O.O. Nobody does that. But he still believes in the role of the local media. He wants. He cares about the. He cares about us feeling that we have access. All these teams that shut down access everywhere. Mike would never stand for that because he believes in the importance of the local paper, of the local media. We of course don't travel with the team for ethical reasons. But they still want us to know that that offer is always there if we ever wanted to take it. And they don't ever want to feel like we couldn't do a trip for anything financial or anything because he cares about us being there and covering the team, which it's just in this NFL where they want less coverage because they feel like they've already got more they can handle in most markets. It's insanely rare.
You have two major sports owners in this town who do have, and I know this speaking from, you know, and I know talking to both of you guys and, but also from my own experience of talking to people out in the business community who have a respect, a healthy respect for the media and that shoe leather journalism and the beat writing, the guys, you guys who are out there every day and in the trenches, they have a respect for that.
No doubt. They
don't always agree with what you write. But I think Mike Brown is much the same way in that you can criticize him and he's not going to never talk to you again.
No.
Might be mad at you for a day or something, but
yeah,
no. I don't know, maybe not that, but
yeah, not at all.
Well, the thing about Mike is mine and your great friend Jack Brennan, who was the PR guy, would write letters to the editor that would completely be politically different from Mike, but Mike never stopped it, you know?
No.
You know, and I would say the same thing about Mike. I don't know him as well as Castellini, but they're both really good guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're different from us. I mean,
no doubt.
Yeah. They've lived different lives, but they're both at heart very nice and decent people.
Yep.
Do you think, let me ask you one more thing about Castellini. I still remember this very bit, and I think a lot of people do, is that when he had his introductory press conference when he bought the team, saying, we're going to bring championship baseball back to Cincinnati. I think it's unfortunate what's happened to the club because I get the sense he is the kind of guy who I am a man of my word, and that I'm still very much committed to that.
Well, and he's never admitted this to me, but I think it was much harder than he thought.
Yeah,
it's baseball's hard. Yep. I mean, when you look at their division where they have the Cubs and St. Louis and Milwaukee, those would be considered medium market teams, but the Cubs, what they have going for them in St. Louis, people think they're a small market, man. The thing they have with they built this thing out in the outfield that they own and things like that. So it's tougher than he thought. And I think I always go back to this. I think in 2012, they had a real chance. They were probably one of the two or three best teams in baseball. They lost that series, and I think that to this day haunts this franchise. If they had won that year, they would have drawn better. Like I said before, that if you win in this town, you draw. So I think that was such a setback that they didn't win that series.
And now the streak continues of since the 95 Reds, neither of the two professional teams in this city have won a playoff series. That is a long drought. That is a generational for Cincinnati sports fans, and it's part of the story of this city right now. Everyone always talks about Cleveland with the tortured cities. I would contend that Cincinnati quickly moving their way up that list to be right up there where they were. Feynman, I'm sad we didn't get to. I didn't get to really rip on the West Side more, but it's just like everybody on the West Side. You're such nice guys. I feel bad doing it.
You got to be careful when you rip on the West Side.
You're right.
Hey, let's one more question about the West Side. What's your absolute favorite bar, restaurant, favorite place to go outside of your house on the West Side?
I like the West Side Brewery, but my favorite bar is Champions, which a friend of mine owns. And it's kind of like he bought it years ago to kind of be a place where they could bring kids and things like that. It's kind of it's a restaurant / bar. But, that's my go-to
place. For our East Side listeners, where is Champions?
Oh, boy.
I mean, what neighborhoods? Was it in Westwood? Or
it's directions.
It's between work.
Give me directions from my house in Oakley to Champions, and we'll talk about getting around on the west side.
Yeah, it's between work and Glenway. But it sits up on a – yeah, that would be a difficult one. Man,
exactly.
You set me up. Now, did Paulie tell you to ask you?
That's real life. That's real life. Of when you talk about a place, I don't know, it's tough to get there.
Yeah.
It's okay. West Side is full of great people.
That's John Fay. Read him daily.
That's
You've
got it, absolutely. Fay, man, thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I kind of demanded to be on.
You did. You know, you're right. Like, it was more. Much
when
more
when
of
you
demand.
Say this is so Cincinnati, I'm thinking, God, no one's so more Cincinnati than me.
You're right.
I'm an elder guy that married a Seton girl.
Did
and
you
lived.
Guys know each other in high school? Did
no,
you meet in high school?
No, okay. Nope.
You're right. Yeah. That is awesome. Fay, man, thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
All right.
Much thanks again to Fay Man for joining us. Always great to have him. I feel like we are lucky. We have access to talk and BS with people like Fay Man all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he's always one of my favorite people to talk to because he's just so he's interesting. He's like the nicest dude ever. And he knows about so much stuff. He's got a great sense of present, future, history. Like, he's just a good dude.
I mean, his institutional knowledge of Cincinnati and the Reds and the stories that he has it's golden.
Yeah, absolutely. Great having him on. All right, time for our That's So Cincinnati moment of the week. I will open.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah, appreciate that. That's better than the drum roll. I'll take that. I will take that over a drum roll. So my That's a Cincinnati moment of the week is the simple things in life that this city can offer for you. And that is our fine zoo. We are really like we are legitimately, if you know a lot of the stuff that goes on, you are legitimately lucky to be in the city with everything they do at the Cincinnati Zoo. And I know I spent a lot of last week ripping on Fiona.
Fiona.
Look, I've got my opinions on that, partially because I love so many things that they do at the zoo, and I feel like everyone focuses on Fiona, and it takes away from a lot of the other great stuff they do over there. Prime example is my That's a Cincinnati moment of the week. This was
dun, dun, dun.
A very cool thing. It was they do a program for toddlers, and you know, I have an 18-month-old, and you can bring your kid in. It's a little small. It's a very small class. And essentially, you have like, you know, a kindergartner daycare teacher. They basically turn it into. And it's like an hour long. And they'll read book. And they'll like get your kid going and like doing moves and acting like an animal and stuff like that. And they'll teach you a little bit about something about a certain animal. And all of a sudden, boom, in comes live animal. In the case of the class I went to this week.
Hippo.
In comes Fiona, flopping around near my daughter. A little bunny, Henry the bunny, came in and comes in, and they let them all pet the bunny, and then let the bunny basically loose, and they have a little like they feed them there.
It's like
a little interactivity for the kids and things like that. And then they brought out like a box turtle, and they had a box. And they showed it. They showed how it burrows because they put it in a little wood chip thing, and it burrows itself down in there. And the kids all think that's cool, and they get to touch the turtle and watch it. And then they teach you about how squirrels burrow. It was all about like winter animals and stuff like that. So we went out in their little space and where they feed all the squirrels and the birds, and they have this little sanctuary, and they go and they find squirrel holes and they get to dig around a little bit out there.
Nice.
Just a cool little thing. It was small. It was a quick thing. I did it. Actually, my folks came down, so Grandma and Grandpa came through, and I went, and it's just one of those things. It is we're so lucky to have, and this is a tiny bit of the great stuff that they do over at the zoo. It's a very small thing. They have classes that you can be doing those year round. But they do so much cool stuff, and they've got Festival of Lights going on now, which is awesome. I just think that it's so Cincinnati to appreciate everything they do over the zoo, and how lucky we are really to have it here in the city, because
it is a gem.
It's more than just hey, go and look at Fiona. And I really—that's why I have Fiona fatigue, because I just feel like so many other great things they do over there don't get noticed.
We need to get a We need to get someone from the zoo on
Thane
the show.
Maynard.
Thane Maynard. I was going to say Thane Maynard or whoever. But we talk a lot about the zoo on here. And you know, rightfully so, because it is...
It's a big deal.
It's one of the real treasures of this wonderful city.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. Like, I think a lot... I think there's probably... Certainly kids love Fiona, and but there's probably some Fiona fatigue going on. But I'm glad you talked about that, because there are so much more things going on at the Cincinnati Zoo than just Fiona, and people need to know about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Festival Lights is cool, too. I mean,
my family went a couple weeks ago, and I had to miss because of work, and I was bummed because I always love going every year.
Yeah. Do you have a That's So Cincinnati moment or anything?
I'm really struggling for a Cincinnati moment.
Well, you need to start focusing on this.
I know.
What's happening in Wyoming land right now?
Wyoming Cowboys just won
celebrating their state championship. Big time.
They are. It's funny because my wife was like, this was last Friday. She's like, oh, hey, everyone's wearing blue today. And I'm like, yeah, I've only lived in Wyoming for a year and a half, and I'm not even loyal to my own high school, per se. And I'm like, my kid's in kindergarten. I'm not that into it yet.
Yeah.
I'm not going to put a Wyoming sticker on the back of my car.
Will he be allowed to play football?
Very good question. So after they won the state title Saturday night, I think this was last night or two nights ago when we were getting ready for bed. We're throwing the football around the house, and I was like, go Cowboys, and they won the state title. I started acting like a coach. I was like, you're going to be on the next state championship team. If you're going to be on it, that starts now. Starting to be a champion, it starts now in kindergarten. Yeah. My wife's just like, okay. And I said, are you going to play football? And my kid's like, yeah, I want to play football, blah, blah. My wife just sort of looks at me, so I'm like, it's a discussion for another day.
Yeah, right. You know what? And what has happened is the rise of flag football has been so great for youth that there's no reason a kid should be playing tackle football until high school. In my opinion,
yeah.
And you accomplish the same things through flag, and that flag becoming cool is the greatest thing that can happen for grade schools, because it's you still get teamwork, you still get all the concepts of discipline and things that come along with learning the game of football and you know, executing game plans and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But with none of the real risk, it's like 7-on-7 became huge in Texas. Has been huge there for a long time. That's where you see a lot of the current NFL offenses come from, these great quarterbacks. And we've seen that in Cincinnati here as well. In the suburbs, flag football is just huge, and tech football numbers are just plummeting. And I think that's fantastic. As someone who has background in this type of stuff, there is nothing better. There's nothing better than to get your kid involved in playing flag and understanding that that's cool. And I'm happy that that's taken on so much. I think any suburb in this city or any even whatever school district you're in, you can find flag football teams and play. And highly recommend that if it's something that you're looking into.
Oh, I didn't know we had that. I know that was a big
deal. It's around.
That's cool.
It's growing. It's certainly growing a lot. Because parents, that's what parents want. Parents just want their kids to be safe. And they know the dangers that are out there about football, and but still want, you know, all the great things that come from the game.
I'm going to hit the new Fifth Third Arena tonight.
Ooh, I have seen it.
You have been. You've been inside.
I went to. They played some. I don't even remember it was their second game.
I'm going as a fan. So
yeah, I went as a fan too, because I wanted to get the fan experience. I sat up top actually. It's there's not a bad seat in the house.
Okay, I'm really excited about it.
Go to the bar with the Cincinnati Laser print. All on the back wall.
Okay,
it's freaking awesome. Really,
oh,
really cool.
Say, oh, it's got free beer or something, or $2 beers or something.
Yeah, I wish. No, the beers are not cheap.
Gotta pay those bonds back.
You got to pay it back. They get you. They come to get you. So yeah, no, you got to do that.
I do have that so Cincinnati moment of the week. I just thought of it. I forgot. This is something I meant to. I knew I had one, and I was drawing a blank. But. Sky Star, Ferris Wheel has just been extended to stay here until June on the banks. It was going to leave this month. I want it to be a permanent fixture on the banks. It's a great addition to our skyline. I think it's we talked about the banks in our very first episode. It's one of those kinds of things I think that maybe can draw people to the banks because Lord knows there needs to be more people going down there.
I would agree that more people need to be going down there. I just think it's such a, like a cliche. You see them everywhere now, and like putting a Ferris wheel on, it just feels so. It's fake.
It's not like, so Cincinnati.
It's not so Cincinnati at all.
See, I don't care about what everyone else is doing. I care about Cincinnati and what Cincinnati's doing.
It's just a cliche thing to do, and I don't feel like there's any originality to it at all. And I think you like it, and I find it's gotten a little old. I feel like it's almost unsightly.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not a fan. I'm just not a fan of it. No, I'm not riding Ferris wheel. I've ridden Ferris wheels before. I'm familiar with how they work.
Well, this is an indoor. You sit indoor. A little gondola. That's what they call it.
Yeah, congratulations.
Ooh.
It's just my opinion.
Who's the curmudgeon?
No one cares about my opinion. I'm just sharing my opinion because I'm allowed, because I have a microphone in my hand, and you talked
you're
about
you're abusing that. Your platform, criticizing the wheel is fair.
I'm not criticizing it. It's going to stay anyway, no matter what I think.
Stay permanently.
Whether we both were against this.
Well, you too.
I'll take that over Richard Marx, that's for sure. That much I know.
Trying to think if I could sing a Richard Marx song to the Ferris wheel.
That's our cue.
Oh, yeah. It'll be here till June, the endless summer nights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Very happy to have everybody join us. Remember, if you have a chance, please go drop us a review on iTunes. Subscribe. We love to hear from you. If you have ideas, hit us up on Twitter at Paul Daner Jr. If you're not following me, at J Williams Cincy.
And I remember how you love me.
I hope your idea is for him to stop singing, but I don't feel like we can stop it. This is what people are learning about you nights. Is that this is who you
people
are.
People could have endless summer nights if that Ferris will stay here forever.
That's correct. They could.